This episode of The Bog is brought to you by Jotunheim Nutrition, the best way in America. Stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts and sell you poison. Instead, give it to one of our guys. So whether you're an experienced gym bro, like the Golden One himself, or you're getting into the Temple of Iron as a noob, Jotunheim Nutrition has GMO-free products for everybody of all skill levels, made by the Golden One himself. So go over to JotunheimNutrition.com and get yourself some whey, or they have the whole package there. It's called Gifts of the Old World, Treasures of the Old World. Comes with some coffee, all kinds of other good stuff. So check it out, JotunheimNutrition.com. Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog, live here on Dave Martell YouTube channel every single Monday and Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Unfortunately, this evening we ran a little bit late, but that's okay. We're here, and we're going to talk about my awesome experience at the Folkish Summer Halloween, and we're going to talk about tribal ethics. We're going to talk about all kinds of cool stuff. But before we get started, we got to do our plugs like always. If you like The Bog, you support The Bog, you want to help us keep the lights on, go to patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody. $5 all the way up to $50. You get a sticker, you get a mug, and most importantly, you get the RSS feed. So you get audio of every single show that we do to listen to on your commutes, in your car, at the gym, or at work. That's patreon.com/TheBog. Go sign up. You want to support The Bog another way, make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop and sign up. Guys, white boy summer, get yourself a sweet muscle shirt. Get yourself a tank top. Get yourself, ladies, you can get a nice dress. All kinds of stuff. We've got onesies for the babies and for the esoteric order of grill dads out there. We have artisan chef aprons with the Bog logo on it, so you can flex on all your buddies, your sweet Bog merch. So go to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop and check out our merch. If you want to support one of our friends, go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. You guys saw the shows we did with Neil John. Guy's brilliant. Everybody's gotten a reading, has said it's just absolutely mind-blowing. I loved mine. You're going to love yours. So go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check it out. Go give him a like. If you decide to get a reading, tell him Big Dave sent you. Let him know that Big Dave sent you. And also, the Bizarre Kives are here. The Bizarre Kives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines, is available on Amazon. $13. Only $13. Go get yourself a copy. Pulp is back. Pulp Fiction is coming back with a vengeance. It is over a dozen stories from a dozen amateur pulp authors that write in the vein of guys like Robert E. Howard and H.P. Lovecraft, fantasy, sci-fi, cosmic horror, short stories. Excellent, excellent stuff. We worked our hands to the bone on this, poured our heart and souls into it. You guys are going to love it. Go to, you also go to Bizarre, the Bizarre Archives, Com and click on the link at the bottom of the image. So let's get started here. Miss Swan, how are we doing this evening?
Very, very well, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. A little tired from my busy weekend, but I'm feeling good. I'm feeling refreshed, recharged. I feel wonderful.
Great. Yeah, I would imagine that you've had some good spiritual recharge there.
Oh, yeah, big time. So for folks that don't know, it didn't see me posted about it, I recently went to, more than just last weekend, from Thursday until yesterday night, I went to the Folkish Summer Hollowing, which is an event that is hosted by the wonderful people from the Ermine Folk Odinist community. And this is an event that is held in northern Pennsylvania up in the beautiful Poconos Mountains. We got tickets. A good chunk of my kindred went. Good chunk of my clan went, probably including kids, about 10 of us. 10 of the Skaferlings went, and we went, and it was just such a wonderful time. It's 4 days. You go in kind of around noon. They have like an opening ritual thing. They flew our kindred flag. It was the highest our flag's ever flown. A whole bunch of other kindreds from all over the Northeast, and then from abroad as well. There's a couple Europeans there. There's over 100 people at this thing, right? And kids everywhere.
That's epic.
Yeah, it was like mostly kids.
Yeah, that's really, really great. I mean, just seeing the pictures that you share too, so many children, that's really a positive vibe for sure. Like a white pill, as they say.
Yeah. I'm about to like skip the white pills. I'm going only with folk pills from now on. I'm telling you. Yeah, this is
that
great.
That sounds. Yeah, so this was practically a more or less open invitation, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe it's the organization that did it. They're called, the Ermine Folk Oldness Community, and they're located kind of in northern Pennsylvania, South New York State. They have some other members that are from like New Jersey and Delaware and so on. It's mainly in the sure. Northeast United States. And I think this is their I don't know if this is their only open event, but this is one of their open events as their biggest one. It's like a camp out. There's cottages. Everybody gets saddled up with these cottages, which are pretty decent, by the way. Ours had like a bathroom in it and stuff like that. No hot water, nothing like that. Right. But hey, we're roughing it, right? But yeah, we went. It was that food was excellent. The people were great. And let me tell you that for my kindred, this is our first like really big kind of open heathen event that we've attended as a group. And it was incredible. It was like complete strangers right away were like dear friends, like old friends. Like, you know, I mean, going into it, like, you know, because I do the bog and everything like that, there's some people there that are familiar with the bog and familiar with me. So I was like, it wasn't like I was going in there completely rando or anything like that, which, by the way, shout out to all the bog lords that I met there that came up. Man, there's some great guys that just came up and shook my hand and said, hey, man, I love the bog. Thank you so much. And, like, all this. And I kept it straight, but that touched me in the heart. You know what I mean? I felt some kind of way about that. It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So this is basically an annual event, right?
Yes, ma'am. It's an annual event. Happens in the summertime. I guess this is like their 10th year of doing it. They've been going on for a long time doing this.
So what's the basic theme there in terms of the ritual theme? Like, is this sort of like a late midsummer celebration or more of an like end of summer celebration? So what do they do?
Yeah, it's like I guess it's like a late summer kind of celebration. And the way that it kind of works is, like I said, you get there, there's tons of activities for the kids and like all that kind of stuff, but it's kind of centered around their main bloat that they do on Saturday night. And let me tell you, this is a pretty crazy bloat. There's a lot of people there. And the leader of the Ermine Folk, Mr. Mike, he builds like this like replica, like, Viking ship, right? It's probably like 10 feet long. It's actually pretty darn big. You got to get a few guys to carry this thing. They fill it up with like offerings, and then they put it on the fire and set it on fire. And he officiates the whole bloat, the entire ritual and everything like that. And then after it's over, everybody goes, gets dressed, and they go over to the dining hall to have a big old sambal. And for those of you that don't know what a sambal is like everybody sits at a table, you pass a horn around full of beer or meat or whatever. Some groups use it like a beer stein, but it's mainly a horn, and everybody kind of takes turns. You have a few rounds, everybody takes turns saying their piece, whether it's they want to say a prayer or a hail to the gods, and then or they want to talk about an ancestor or something like that. Traditionally, like in an American heathenry, they do three rounds, one to the gods, second to the ancestors, third is open. And then, unfortunately, I had to bounce out after my second round because, my kids were, because I had kids there and stuff like that. But, it was just so awesome to have this. It was like, literally, there was like maybe like 50 or more dudes in this place, these tables around in a square. And everybody was just getting rowdy, man. Everybody's speaking from their hearts, shooting and hollering, expressing their devotion and like stuff like that. There's some guys that were like real, like army guys getting fired. People pounded on the tables. It was rowdy and it was fun. It was great.
Great. So were the kids still present for the sambal, or were they in bed by then?
Yeah, there was some kids there. Like, for example, my kids came for a little bit, but it was we shuffled them off after a little bit, because I like to have my kids exposed to the rituals and everything, and have them participate to the best that they can. There was actually quite a few young guys, a couple like second generation heathens there with their older fathers. We're talking.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, like preteen to a little bit older teenagers, and they knew how to bloat, they knew how to hail, they knew how to do it, and it was really, really cool.
Yeah, that sounds really good. And I'm just kind of asking because whenever my kids have been present for sort of a. Like when they were allowed to be up late for a sambal. And I just love how kids who grew up with this, they just always eagerly scream hail, like after every toast or boast.
Yeah, that's the cutest, right? You get these little tiny kids that are like 2 to 4 years old, and they don't even know what they're doing. They just hail, hail, hail. They just love yelling or pounding on the table. They just love the rowdy part of it. That's just so adorable.
That's awesome. So in terms of the bloat, did everybody bring offerings for this? Like everybody who came added to the boat, or?
Quite a few people did. A lot of people brought, fruits and vegetables from their harvests. Mike's been offered a nice bottle of wine on behalf of my clan. There's even some kids making some offerings. We had one of my kinsman's daughters actually offered her baby doll. It was like her favorite baby doll. She offered it. That was like her little offering. So there's some kids that like made some offerings too. It was pretty cute.
So since there were so many kids there, I understand there were a lot of kid-centered activities as well during the whole camp.
Yeah, let me tell you something. These guys, the Ermine folk, they really focus on the kids. And it was everything from, there was like a bunch of arts and crafts, making little lanterns, writing their names in runes. There was a stomp rockets activity where they made little rockets out of construction paper, and they made little PVC launching pads for them, and they would go stomp on this bottle and launch their rockets up in the air. My son just went nuts for that. And then they set off a real rocket, and like then they had like a hammer toss thing, which, by the way, they had three categories for the hammer toss for the kids. My clan won two of them, and it was our girls won, actually, by the way.
Congratulations. Some real like Valkyries in the making, I guess.
Yeah, they really killed it. And they had a big old raffle with a lot of beautiful things. I acquired some very nice stuff there. They have some vendors and stuff set up selling their wares, and we splurged. We bought a bunch of stuff just because we love this event. And yeah, I just So I walked away with a big painting of Idhun and her apples, and then we bought a bunch of other trinkets and stuff. It was really, really cool.
Well, that's great. I mean, this sounds like it has a lot of potential to for growth too, right? I mean, in terms of, was there any did you make or any music, or was there any music played there live, or?
Well, apparently in years past they had like musicians come out and stuff like that because I guess because of like COVID restrictions or something like that, some of the music folk couldn't make it. But there was
Right.
a heathen karaoke night on Friday, which was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
That sounds good. So, what kind of music was played for the? I don't know how I would choose karaoke songs for a heathen gathering,
Well,
honestly, but.
I'm sure folks can guess. In the first 10 songs, there's like three Manowar songs. There's an Amon Amarth song. There's like
Metal.
a bu it was like a bunch of metal, and then it turned into Irish sea shanties, and then
Yeah.
yeah, and then like some folk songs and stuff like that. And of course, your boy Big Dave had to get up and sing Dean Martin. I sang Dean Martin, and we sang some other songs. And my little boy, he's three. His favorite song in the whole world. It's a Yuletide song, but it's Dominic the Donkey by Lou Monte, and that's like his favorite song in the world. And he begged me to sing it for him. And even though it's summertime, they're like, "Yeah, you gotta sing it for the kid." So we sang it. Everybody sang Dominic the Donkey for my little 3-year-old boy, and it was adorable and so much fun. And dude, it was just wonderful. And just disclaimer, I'm not a member of the Ermine folk. I'm not officially affiliated with them in any way. This is just me coming on my show to express my how much I enjoyed their event, and hopefully to bring some awareness to it and stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, if so I'm not officially sanctioned to like speak on their behalf, just in case.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? Just to put that out there.
for sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it sounds like they're setting the bar, right? I mean, especially in that area of the States.
Yeah, they are a pretty cool organization. I'm not sure how many members they have. I'm only really acquainted with some of their core members and stuff like that. I've had a few of them at my house, and I had an event pretty recently. I called it the River Moot. We all got together like right beside the beautiful Susquehanna River and had a big old barbecue. And that's where I met the leader of the Ermine folk, Mr. Mike. There's another young fellow that's a member of the Ermine folk. I don't know if he wants his name said on air, but he came to my house and visited me one time. He's such a nice guy, and had so much in common with him. And I just, dude, these are just good folks. They're just good folks.
That's great. Yeah,
Yeah.
that sounds like you had a really, really good time. And I think that especially for the children, this is such an important thing to impress on them, the community and tribal aspect of it.
Yeah, it's this is an exoteric faith. This is an exoteric community faith. This is a faith that is practiced. This is a faith that is has traditionally been practiced as a collective, right? This isn't go by yourself to the church and like do your prayers and then say peace be with you and everybody go fuck yourself and that's it. And you're complete strangers. This is a faith that is interwoven into a family building and community, and it's inescapable. So to have an event like this where our kids can go see like the greater community and make friends and connections, and it was like right away, as soon as the kids got there, they squatted up and went around raising hell. It was so much fun. It was like everywhere you would go, like you would be walking, and then like just like a little squad of kids would just like come tearing out of the woods, running around, hooting and hollering, yelling, and just goofing off. And it was great.
So, how many days you said that it went?
It was 4 days. There was like you get there at noon. There's some stuff there for the first night that you're there. And also to mention that this place, it's on a lake. So every day, like the lake opens for a few hours. You go down and do canoes and kayaks and swim and all that kind of stuff. But, you have 2 full days and then kind of 2 half days. So on the final day on Sunday is like, they do like a closing ritual. And then they kind of do like a big, clean up, they have a brunch, and then it's just, and then everybody says farewell, and you know, and that's it. And it was, and I'll tell you what, at the end, I was pretty sad. Like, it was like, I can't believe this went so fast. I can't believe this is over. And it's like these people that I just like just met a few days ago. It's like, I'm going to miss these folks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, so did you have any sort of structuring of the day? Did you start every day with anything religious, or did you just do those particular bloats or little rituals, or how did that go?
Well, every morning they like have this, they have an early morning workout for people. And folks can mm-hmm. go do like some fitness stuff. I didn't go to that. You know what I mean? Like, not saying that, you know, going to the gym is bad or anything like that. But I'm sorry, I'm on vacation. I'm not getting up at 8 in the morning after I just got done drinking and partying the night before to go work out. I'm sorry, I'm just not doing that. Do like a lunchtime workout and I'll show up. But 8 a.m., it ain't happening.
Awesome. Yeah, well, I guess it was enough people doing it, though, I guess, hey?
Yeah, there's folks showing up. A lot of folks there are into fitness and stuff like that. So it was really great stuff. And yeah, and then throughout the day, they kind of had like every hour, every other hour, they had a different thing. Like they had a sauerkraut workshop. They had like a mead making workshop. They had like some stuff on the runes. They had like all kinds of stuff. It was all over the place with the stuff that they were doing. They had a sand casting demonstration, sausage making. It was cool. It was a lot of fun.
So a lot of workshops, that's really awesome that yeah. you take something away from it too. So was there a presentation? You just said that your flag was raised and there were a few other sort of hearths or kindreds or whatever there. So yep. How many groups were there actually represented?
I think official groups, there was, I think I counted 8 on the flagpole. Hmm. So there's
wow.
8 total groups. I believe mine was the most numerous.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of like the group that's running it, right? Ermenfolk.
Right.
Outside of Ermenfolk, I think mine was the most numerous. The rest of them, there was quite a few kindreds that had like a few folks from there that came and, you know, represented their guys and stuff like that. But no, it was cool. I met a lot of folks from the area that ran kindreds and had groups and orgs and clans or whatever they chose to call them, and it's great stuff.
So a great way to network and make connections with other groups, right? I mean, this is really important to everybody too.
Yeah, I actually ran into a guy there who is a fan of the Bog, and he told me he lives a little bit east of me, right? He says one mm-hmm. of the guys in his kindred lives in, and he said what town he lives in, and I was like, dude, I live in that town. He's like, oh, no way. So I'm going to get hooked up with this guy's kindred. And because it turns out we live in the same town. This is pretty crazy.
Wow, that's cool. I mean, this is where you're able to make those connections, right, in the real world. And
yeah.
This is really important to get out of, like, offline, essentially, like out of the internet and meet real people. And as you just said, it makes such a huge difference how you connect to these people when you really meet them. And how many, like, close bonds you can actually make with people in that way, because you're really present with them. So that's really valuable. Well, I mean, from there, I mean, we could just go on to, if you wanted to talk about the event more, but I mean, we could also go on about the principle of how that works and,
sure.
You know, how you start those kinds of events, or how you start those kinds of groups. I mean, I know you can't speak of on behalf of Ermenfolk, but I mean, perhaps you have some input for people who are interested in maybe even hosting events like that. What you would have to pay attention to, or whatever.
Sure, I have never thrown a really big event like that. It's probably the biggest event that I've thrown, had, you know, upwards of 30 people to it. Yeah, I mean, it's nothing real huge. I've never done like an overnight camp out thing that was an open event. We do them for my kindred, like private ones, but I've never like really opened the doors for folks quite yet. We're talking about it, and we'd like to someday, but eventually we'll do it when we're ready to do so. As far as throwing an event, man, throwing an event, people love just coming to hang out. You could do just about anything, and if you have some decent food and you have a couple of drinks, folks will come hang out. You don't have to go crazy. You don't have to. You just have to have the trappings of good hospitality with the spiritual aspect. So, folks want to come. They want to come bloat. They want to sumble with other people. That's just the way that we're even folks is like that make the claim that they're solitary practitioners or whatever the term is. They're just usually I just haven't met any folks yet. That's usually just what it is. And by the way, for those of you that think there might not be anybody in your area, let me tell you, this my experience here. Like I just said, there's a guy at the Hollowing who's his kinsman is like in the same town as me. There is a my novitiate. It's just kind of coming into my kindred now. He reached out to me from a completely different sphere that he was a part of on like Telegram. He's like, "Hey, I'm in this town or whatever. do you know anybody that's close to that?" And I was like, "Yeah, me. I'm like right down the road from you, goofball." So I was like, "He's like, oh, really?" So he came down. You know, he came down, and we've been hanging out. He's been, you know, me and him become really good friends. And then he just like right before the ball started, he called me. He's like, "Yo, I shared the pictures from the Hollowing or whatever." And then his friend that he went to school with that lives in his town reached out to him, and he's like, "Yo, you know Dave? I watched the bog. You guys went to that thing, blah, 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 blah." And like, it just turns out that there's so many heathens like in my town, right? That I didn't even know about. Dude, if you think that there's nobody near you, you are out of your mind. You just don't know they're there yet.
Right. So I think real world events are really, really pulling people together in that way, right? Because otherwise you don't know where to look. I know that Urban Folk did start advertising for this event quite a while ago. I think that's also kind of key in terms of organizing something where you want a lot of people to come, is that you're really conscious of your advertising, basically like putting out the word.
That's right. So for those of you that want to throw an event, you don't have to throw some grandiose crazy thing. You know, get the word out, find some folks that you like, that you get along with really well, and you would like to invite them over, tell them to bring a friend. You know, if you really like somebody, you're probably going to like somebody that they really like. That's the best way to build, right, is to find, to get hooked up with friends of friends of friends, and then just kind of go from there. Because you will run into some trouble if you have completely open doors and you just let complete strangers come over to your house. First of all, that's scary. Second, you have no idea who these people are. They could be like murderers and just complete liars and like have nothing to do with what you're talking about. They could be some sort of weird infiltrator, libtoad, goofball, right? Excuse me.
So were they, because you just said to your home, whatever, so where they held the event, did they rent that, or is that part of their owning, like their own land?
I believe they rent it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, I mean, this is also a good option. I mean, right, for people who have that opportunity, if you have a few people, a few friends, whatever, who want to pitch in, and then if you can sell tickets to people who attend, that is also always an option. You don't necessarily have to have people in your living room.
Yeah. I actually know a couple groups. What they do is they chip in and they rent a really nice Airbnb, and they have like a really nice private dinner and all of this stuff, and they sell tickets. You know, they'll sell like a ticket. They'll be like, "You can come." They'll rent out one of these places that houses like 20 people, right? And then they'll, you know, I mean, these places are generally, you know, $500-$600. So they'll say, you know, tickets are $50 to $100 or whatever. You come, complete lodging is taken care of. It's two, three days of, we cook for you and everything. We do bloat and sumble and everything. And it's just going to be like 20 to 30 of us. And that's it. Right. And they do these things, and they're very nice, and they turn out very, very good. And, you know, all you got to do, really, besides getting your hands on the Airbnb, is make the food. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good idea too. I think a lot of people are also a little bit put off or scared by, you know, letting people in too close to their actual private property and whatever, and I understand that. So I think this is a really good option for people who want to invite those folks that they aren't super close or familiar with. So did anybody actually camp out there in a tent or anything, or did everybody get lodged in a cottage?
Everybody got lodged in the cottage, and I think some people brought like a fifth wheel pop up camper kind of thing.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, in the summertime, camping in tents is also always an option, depending on what type of event you're having, which actually also brings down the cost, depending on what kind of property you have access to. So, I mean, there are a lot of different ways of pulling this off.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a lot of great ways to feed people too. The thing is, I've always had the policy of if you're a good host and you make good food, people are going to have a good time. It doesn't other things matter, but the first step is to have good food. And mm-hmm. that doesn't, and I've gone to things, and I'll be honest, I'm a food snob. But I'm okay. Like, if I go to your place and it's just like a big cookout and you just got basic hamburgers, hot dogs, whatever, I'll, that's fine. I'm not going to be like, what a scumbag or like anything like that. But if I come to your house and you're making steak and salmon and you got shrimp and you got some micro brews or a nice bottle of homemade wine or something like that, I'm like, all right, this guy really cares about his guests. That's like the next level. So there are really cost-effective ways of going about doing this. People that have come to my events, mm-hmm. they always comment on, you know, because I have steaks and I have salmon and I have all of the, you know, I usually cook very well for people because that means something to me. That's like my gift to them for coming in and bringing their gift of company and friendship, is I want to gift them with a really nice meal that maybe they don't usually get, right? People usually don't get the chance to have salmon. It's a special occasion thing. So I like to make special occasion food. So what you want to look out for, this is what I do a lot of times. If you go to your local butcher or supermarket or whatever, like the day before, the night before, or the morning of, or whatever, usually the night before, you can find very, very nice things on manager's special. I have bought perfectly fine filet mignons for under $5 on manager's special. And what's usually, you know, it'll be like, it'll have a little bit of the, what is that called, oxidation or whatever. It's a little bit miscolored. That's perfectly fine. That's fine for another week. But they just can't sell it because it just looks a little funny. You fry that mm-hmm. up on the grill, people their minds are going to be blown. I'm telling you.
Yeah, so I mean it's another thing, of course, the cost, right? And in terms of hosting a larger event, but I mean you can start small, and the most important thing I think is to actually get out into the real world and meet real people, and then that a lot of those problems also solve themselves. Usually you have somebody in there who has a special skill or access to some resources that are going to be helpful. You know, maybe you have a hunter there, maybe you have like a farmer there, people who can provide some food and or lodging or a place to hold a bloat or, you know, all those things. But you're not going to find them unless you actually go out and meet them.
Yeah. You gotta put in work. You know what I mean? You got to really look around and everything like that. But as far as like starting an event and hosting an event and getting people coming over, it's really not hard. I know some people have a little bit like stage fright about it. Man, let me tell you, it's once you do it a couple times and you have like a core group of people that are with you that help you, it's like, it's so much fun, man. I'm telling you, getting together in real life is where it's at. That's what we need to do. We talk all, you know, there's this thing on it. People talk a lot about theory. People talk a lot about ideology. We talk about philosophy. We talk about history and all these things. And these things are all wonderful. Like, don't get me wrong. I love talking about these things. But nothing in this world matters unless you are doing in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, people are usually also really grateful. I mean, if they get the chance to join an event like this, I mean, just the way you're talking right now is testament to that, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Just the way you appreciate that somebody hosted this event, and most people are that way. I mean, you always have a few people who may be nitpicky or whatever, but most people on average are just super grateful if somebody starts something, somebody invites them and somebody puts something out there. So yeah, if you do have the resources and if you do have the time to dedicate to planning such an event, I think it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah. It's like I say, it's just so fulfilling. It's so fun and it's totally worth it. It's totally worth it to get off the darn internet. You know, for the folks out there that are still kind of finding their way, meeting some people on the internet or getting whatever, just jump in head first. And if the first group of people you run into, you don't love them, or maybe they're not your type of people. Because there's going to be groups that you meet that they're nice people. You're like, oh, these are nice people, but they're not really like, yo, you want to get grouped up with people that have your sense of humor, that are around your age, you know, probably around your economic class. You want people that you can like that relate to you on as many levels as possible, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you'll bounce around and you'll probably hang out with a few different groups and you'll make friends with those groups and you'll be long-time friends with them. I have heathen friends that are at Kindreds and stuff that maybe they're a little bit older than my group. They're just a little bit different than us, and like we love them. We think that they're great. They're great friends, and we can't wait to see them at events. But we're not really we're not really compatible in the way that we could hang out every day, right? Yeah. Somebody that's 50 something years old isn't gonna want to hear the kind of jokes that we have. You know what I mean? They just it's not their sense of humor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing, though, is the larger the group is, or the larger the event is, too, the more that can spread out and little pockets can form that, you know, get along with each other and just kind of hang out. So that's also, that goes away with size, I'd say, that you do have, if you have a sort of a multi-generational group, that just sort of, it sorts itself out, let's just say.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, Ms. Swan, hearing about kind of like my experience here in the States with like Kindreds and groups and communities and stuff like that, would you say that your experience in Germany is different, or does it sound like it's kind of the same thing?
Well, it's a different time, more so, because, I mean, I've lived in North America for a good decade now, and most of my sort of purely religious heathen group experiences in Germany are from my childhood or from youth, right? Like all the way up to, I'd say, about 18 or whatever. And you know, the thing is, and this is actually also something to be wary of, is a lot of those groups then, and I don't know how it is now, I mean, just always sort of the disclaimer, I'm not like on top of these things, but the problem in a lot of groups then was that the spiritual or religious aspect was often just sort of a veneer over a political stance. And I think that's a problem. I think that's just no good, right? Because that is not the core of a worldview. Shouldn't be politics. Like politics is just a tool. It shouldn't be your, like, it shouldn't dictate your personality or what kinds of people you want to talk to, whatever. So I think that the main issue in those groups in the past was that they were too political, basically. And I don't know how that is in America. I'm pretty sure there are also those kinds of groups.
Sure.
But those are groups that would actually probably take a wide berth around because they are just focused on, in my opinion, the wrong thing, the wrong issue. So the more apolitical a group is and presents themselves, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, like Ms. Swan said, we all have political opinions. Like, let's just be honest here. Like, you guys know, you guys have been following me for any amount of time, you know I got political opinions. We all do. But you to force your faith to contour and bend a knee to political beliefs is like, you might as well just go be a liberal. Let's be honest here. Like, the difference between, like, true traditionalists and modernists is traditionalists adhere to the tradition. The tradition usurps all. That is the king, right? You kneel before the king of tradition. Modernists, on the other hand, they mold traditions around their preconceived notions, mostly political ones, right? Like, we talk about the unis on Universalist Heathens, how they say that it's not the all father, it's the some father, like whatever corny heresy that they say, right? Like my boy Destagnation says, politics is downstream from faith. That is correct. I hold the political positions that I do because those are the positions that my faith teaches.
Well, but I mean, you are mainly informed by your faith and by your folk, by your traditions. You don't actually focus on politics. I mean, everybody talks about politics sometimes, right? When I do talk to people about politics, a lot of people find me hard to nail down because I don't ascribe to any specific political party or whatever, you know? So I just form my opinions based on my spiritual and, you know, it's like a holistic worldview. And politics is just one little aspect or a tool in that. And I like the downstream of religion, or what did he say? Downstream of
politics faith. Is downstream from faith.
Faith. Yeah. So I think that's really true.
Yeah. Ryan says in the chat, he says, heritage and preservation of our folk ethnic group is not petty politics, though. Yes, this should not be the focus of all the time. Well, here's the thing. We as heathens, we don't have to announce that because our folk, our patrilineal heritage is divine. Right. It is explicitly says this. Right. That folkism is divinely mandated. That you know, as you would say, preservation of our folk is divinely mandated. To work against this is blasphemous and heretical to the teachings and the truth of the Golden.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you live it. I mean, if you focus too much on politics, it becomes really crampy and it becomes very much not family centered and family friendly.
Yeah.
And the thing that is important is that you can't live a religion or a tradition or anything without families. And let me tell you, I mean, wives are usually pretty freaking bored of this stuff. So they don't really want to hear you talk on and on about politics. And then on top of that, talk to your kinsmen about politics too all the freaking time. I mean, this is just not normal life, right? And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a political opinion or anything, but you shouldn't center your kindred's outlook or whatever on that. It's just not important enough, in all honesty. As I said, it's just a tool, and whatever ends serve our folk, whatever ends serve your people are good enough for me.
Yeah. So that's you know, my take on it. I don't need to be out here expressing, you know, all of these types of things because I live it, right? I don't need to come out here and say and hoot and holler about protecting the folk and everything like that, because I'm actually protecting the folk. You know what I mean? We're raising children. We are teaching them the traditions. We are advocating for them. We are building communities. We are doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying don't talk about, don't ever mention it or whatever, be hush-hush and scared of it. But what I'm saying is we don't need to blabber on about these kinds of things. It's enough talk. It's a time to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's another aspect to this also. And that is, you attract whatever group you advertise to, right? So if you advertise to edgy right-wing people, whatever, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get some edgelords. You're going to get social outcasts. You're going to get people who can't get along with other people. That is my personal experience. And it's not just mine. I've heard this many, many times. So if you want to attract people who are actually social and capable of building social structures, family structures, you're not going to look for those particular people. That's just simply not who you're advertising to. So that's just sort of my reminder to people who want to start groups or whatever. Don't make them political.
Yeah.
And politics is just an integral part then of how you view the world. But that is just a part. It's not the focal point, right? So don't make it about politics, because that's what I see too. And in Germany you have that division essentially between heathen groups who see themselves either on the right or on the left, basically.
Yeah.
And that's no good, because in the end of the day, you're going to want people joining together, like anyone who has a healthy outlook, and I mean healthy, right? Not in any particular political spectrum. I mean, we could go on all day about which side is more healthy, but that's not what it's about. It's about like people that you can tell when you hang out with somebody in the real world, if they're mentally stable, if they are productive, if they are okay with children and in groups, and if they can behave in front of women, like all those things become apparent. And those are the people that you're going to want to build groups with, not people who drone on and on about whatever kind of they want to do in the political spectrum, right?
Yeah. Michael says politics is the tool globalists maneuver us with. I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I would say I've talked at length about this. I've written it in articles and whatnot. Is I firmly believe that political identities are a simulation, as modernity has many simulations of things that are actually truly primordial. And by primordial, I mean going back to the original form, things that are woven into your humanity and who you are as a human being, right? So when I look at politics and political identities and political ideologies, I see people trying to simulate tribalism because they no longer have that. They forget how to do it. It's no longer part of their life. You know, the forces of capitalism, the forces of modernity have reduced us into economic units, has reduced us into political units, right? They've turned us into machines. They count us. We're just numbers. We're no longer recognized as spiritual beings. And one of the biggest examples of this is the idea of the nuclear family. The average basic bitch conservative will clutch pearls and shout from the rooftops about the destruction of the nuclear family and the tradition of the nuclear family, when in fact the nuclear family is a stripped down, reduced version of the family, a perverted version of the family that has been made to be more efficient and more easily categorized. The true family form is the clan. You know, that the reason they call it the nuclear family is because it is just the nucleus. It is stripped of all of the other elements, right?
Yeah.
So when we get into the idea of political ideologies, people identify with political ideologies because they no longer identify as their father's son. They no longer identify as a devotee of this deity. They no longer identify as the having lineage from some king or hero, or having a tie to a certain land. They no longer identify as these things, because modernity has deemed these things inefficient, obsolete and has dissolved them. So as a desperate reach to feel human once again, humans, modernists, have decided to start identifying as these banal, meaningless political ideologies. So they identify with this fake illusion of overarching unity with all of these people that they've never met, while they turn and they fight tooth and nail and spill the blood of their own brothers for this fake ideology. It is completely backwards. It is completely monstrous, and it must be destroyed. And we must go back to our true identities and what we truly identify as, and that is you are your father's son. You are your mother's daughter. You are of the folk. These people around you that you share blood relation with through birth and marriage and oath, these people are your tribe. Everybody else is Utengard, and you must be willing to face the world in favor of your tribe. That is the primordial way. That is the secret sauce of victory of a people. And that is exactly why the Afghanis have been able to kick the asses of every single empire that tries to come in and conquer them, because they are ferociously tribal and they are religious extremists that are willing to fight and die for their God.
Yeah, and I mean, you just hit on something that I was also thinking earlier, is that politics in the current day is often just missing the mark because of the scope. It's just like it's a problem of scope. The scope is way too big. Like, people who engage in mainstream politics, they try to make politics, or they try to find policies for everybody. As you just said, the Utengard, the people who don't actually matter to, or shouldn't matter to you. And you're essentially just wasting, blowing away your energy that you should be focusing on your children, who are probably sitting at home and not like participating. This is a huge problem I see, and this is actually something that I experienced as a child too, was that the children were often sort of, the second thought. They were not involved. They were just kind of taken along to their parents' hobby, if that. A lot of the times the parents went by themselves and they didn't take their children because they didn't think that it was an event for children, because there was this weird division between an adult and a child's world, basically, when they were dividing that, when they should have included the children and should have given the children something to identify with. So, I mean, the few kids that I grew up around that were also in heathen families, a lot of them ended up not really following the faith. They just kind of split off. They didn't really care about it because they were never given these incredibly important experiences as children, where they felt rooted, where they felt connected to the group and to their family. They were always just kind of like tagging along at best, as almost kind of like maybe even in the way.
That's a shame.
It's the reality, and I think it's the reality, especially if you make it too political, because then you don't have anything to offer to children. Politics isn't for children. Politics is for adults. So if you make it too political, you're not gonna succeed in uniting generations and having like a multi-generational group.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. It's like, I just can't like wrap my head around it. You know, it's like, I really view politics as like a fluid thing, right? I am willing to accept any sort of economic model or political ideology that will enrich my folk and my tribe at the time, right? If you told me that the best way to enrich and protect my tribe right now is communism, I would become a communist. If it was become an anarchist, I would be an anarchist. If it is a monarchist, I would be a monarchist. It doesn't matter. Whatever protects, whatever enriches, and whatever provides a prosperous future for my folk That's what it is. My allegiance is to them, and my allegiance is to the gods, and everything else is not even on the list of priorities.
I mean, politics is also, you know, the word itself, the way, where you do have to be political or where you do have to sort of employ politics is if you have a large group, you have to become you know, adept at dealing with different people, uniting different people, making hard decisions. Sometimes that is the kinds of politics that you're going to engage with. And if you want to go a little bit out from there, I also think that it's really quite a valuable to have people who do have that sort of knack for the political, to go into local politics, to be become influential in their, you know, become elected to your, I don't know, town council or something. Make make your priorities to your people and to your religion part of local politics. I mean, that is something where you can actually change something instead of, you know, trying to, I don't know, go to big rallies or whatever, where you ultimately you're just going to make a fool out of yourself, in all honesty, and just actually become active in terms of, if you want to be political, become active in terms of local politics. Because that is, that would be my take on that.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. You know, every other group in the entire world, they find success through tribal in-group preference, through nepotism, through financial gain, you know, sending their kids to school to become doctors and lawyers or whatever, putting their people into positions of power in the local government, giving breaks to their friends and family members in the community that are business owners or whatever. That's how they win. You know what I mean? They don't win by arguing political theory on the internet, right? They don't care about that. They care about actual, like, material success, right?
Yeah, and I'm also not going to knock people who engage in metapolitical discourse and stuff like that. I do think that is also really important, but that is not the focal point of a tribal group. That is not the focal point of your kindred, whatever. And that's what I'm trying to say, is that the main the takeaway for me from my childhood experiences was that if you focus your religious group around that, you are making a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And you're opening yourself up to a lot of problems. Yeah. And you attract the wrong people. You attract absolute edge lords and misfits and people who are actually not going to ever give back. So that is what you want to avoid at all costs, is people who are absolute deadbeats. And you're going to get that if you invest like openly politically in that way.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't mean to speak too harshly. I've read a lot of political theory. I talk politics a lot. You know, if people that follow me, right, I rip liberalism apart any chance that I get, right? So to have, like I said before, to have political opinions is fine, and to be interested in politics is fine, but it what really matters in who you are isn't a political ideology. Who you are is your father's son. That's who you are, and that is what is primordial, and that is what. That's the secret sauce to victory and success, right? For our people.
Yeah. So yeah, in terms of the groups that I have experienced in Germany, my family went through a few groups, because that's another thing that, well, you just said you meet different people, maybe you don't get along and stuff, but there's also a problem with intolerance, and I don't mean this in the mainstream way. Intolerance, but you know, with, you know, wanting to have everybody in your group share your exact same outlook and opinion. If you are that narcissistic, maybe you're not a group person. Yeah. But unfortunately, in a lot of groups at that time, I'm talking about the 90s here, right, for the most part, you had a lot of people with very narcissistic tendencies that were actually wanting to build more so a fan club than a functional religious group. Mm-hmm. And that is another thing I would caution against, is to essentially build a fan club. You don't want You don't want to be the absolute core of your group, and without you, everything falls apart. Everything needs to be interconnected. You do need more of a web than sort of like the centralized, you know, that all the ties only lead to you as the central person. That's not very sustainable at all. So, and that's why this family structure, clan structure thing is so important, that people are interconnected, that you have a lot of ties between the individuals in your group, and that they don't only go because they like you. So yeah, that would be another word from my experience.
Yeah, I will say this though, there must be a patriarch.
I mean, it must be a natural patriarch, right? And not just kind of like some kind of pop star without that person, everything completely collapses. That's really important. You mean, you want something for posterity. So you're going to have to, and that's another thing too. If you are older and you are sort of the patriarch, you're going to have to think about what's going to happen when you pass the baton. You know, you're going to have to figure out a hierarchy in your group where, you know, you have your second in command, basically, that can take over if you are not able to, and not be completely just kind of have this lone throne. So that's something that I would say, where a lot of groups have come and gone because of this phenomenon, that there's just this one person who pulls it all together, and they don't include enough people in the hierarchy. And once they are gone, everything is just completely gone.
Yeah, you're talking about a cult of personality. That
essentially,
yeah, that cult of personality is always trouble. So yeah, when you're joining or forming a group or throwing an event, the core focus of it is the ancestral religious tradition, and you're building a family based on faith and love and trust, not on any of this other stuff we're talking about. And somebody said in the chat, a patriarch and a matriarch. Yes, your patriarch should be married. He should be a married man with children. You know, that's just how it is. A father that actually has children and has a wife. First of all, if he is a natural leader and stuff like that, his wife is going to be of similar quality. And it's just good to have in a group. A male leader and a female leader, with the man in charge of kind of the whole thing, and the wife is his second in command, and they have children, and because a father knows more than a single guy. It's just the way that it is.
Yeah.
It's just how it always needs to be, you know. It's just is what it is. But Ms. Swan, we're over an hour, so we gotta shut it down.
Yeah, that was fun.
A lot of fun. So we're going to shut it down this evening. We started out talking about the Folk Summer Hollowing, and then we went all into throwing events and the nature of tribe building and tribal ethics and all kinds of stuff, really good stuff. But like always, we will be back this Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern here on Dave Martell. You can go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. And you get a sticker, a mug, and the RSS feed to the audio. Check us out on shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop for some sweet merch. Go to facebook.com/ironagejodis to check out our friend, Mr. Neil John. And if you decide to get a reading, tell him Big Dave sent you. Check out our latest work, my project, The Bizarre Archives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines, available on Amazon or thebizarrearchives.com. If you like Pulp Fiction in the vein of Robert E. Howard or H.P. Lovecraft. And also, The Bog has been brought to you by Jotunheim Nutrition. Our boy, the Golden One, makes some excellent nutritional supplements for people that get into the Temple of Iron, whether you're a seasoned gym bro or if you're just getting into the Temple of Iron. He makes it's like GMO-free, organic, great stuff. I have it. I love it. I had so many dudes. You can just go to his website at jotunheimnutrition.com and look at the reviews. It speaks for itself. Excellent products. Stop giving your money to multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts and sell you poison. Give it to somebody that cares about you and loves you and makes good, wholesome products that help you and your body and help you get strong, like our boy, the glorious lion, Mr. Marcus. This show is brought to you by JotunheimNutrition.com. Go check that out. But like always, folks, I'll see you guys later in the week, Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'll see you next time. Hail.